X-Pac 1-2-3-60. Featuring weekly news, insider commentary, and interviews with superstars, past and present, from the world of pro wrestling.
A new day is dawning for DX.
And now, your host, Sean X-Pac Wolfman.
Welcome to X-Pac 1-2-3-60, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Sean X-Pac Wolfman. Yeah, we got a good show today. Billy Corgan, William Patrick Corgan on the show a little bit later on. Saw him this weekend. I'm trying to get him in studio, but you know, he's got a lot of stuff going on, and I know what it's like to be that guy, and so I didn't want to.
Yeah, it was really, you know, hard.
Yeah, I just told him. I said, Billy, I just want to have you on the show. So I saw him this week when I saw Denise at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood.
That was
doing
a crazy,
great job.
Fun day.
Yeah, and then we watched NWA World Champion Tim Storm defend the title against Nick Aldis, aka Magnus. Mm-hmm. Was just on the show, was about a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards, we went over to the Hollywood Cemetery and watched Billy have an acoustic set that just murdered it at the Hollywood Cemetery. So
it's awesome. A good place to kill.
And it was so good. Anyways, he's doing some cool things with NWA. I told you guys, I mentioned on the show what I thought about that whole thing, NWA and all that, and just the way it was being done before. And I'm kind of digging what Billy's got going on right now. So I'm happy. I'm really... And he's just a really an amazing human being. Known him for a while. And so it's just an honor to have him on a little while. Sitting on the couch, as usual, we got Jimbo.
What's up, Sean?
It says Jimbo in the booth on your...
Should I change that?
Yeah, because you should change it to Jimbo on the couch.
Okay. I'll get on that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Denise Salcedo.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Denise. Bill Hanstock from uprocks.com. Upcocks.rom.
Be those days today.
it's a different website, but it's still good.
Is it? Yeah. Bill, you were in Cancun for Combate.
Yeah.
Americas. Is that how you pronounce it?
Combate, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Cool. And you, oh, oops, shit, I just about spilled my coffee everywhere. That would have been great. these mugs suck. They're so, like, skinny on the bottom. They're way too easy for them to spill. It's all the tapered mug's fault. Damn, where was I now?
Talk about Bill and Cancun.
Oh, yeah, Bill and Cancun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as exciting as I would have hoped.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
So
almost missed my flight.
Oh, no.
Slipped through my alarm.
Oh,
that's the worst.
Yeah. Well, luckily, apparently on a Sunday in Cancun, the airport is not what I would like to call busy.
Yeah. Huh.
Like, you can just pull up and park right in front of the terminal.
It's a small airport.
Yeah, it's a small airport. Yeah.
That's awesome. Had it been LAX, it would have been the end.
Oh, no. If it had been LAX,
oh, my gosh.
Anyways.
Left in the air.
Oh. Right before we went... Right before we came on air, I farted. I made sure I let everyone know. Locked the door.
Still
Dutch
alive.
My studio is a Dutch oven right now.
Did you see the green smoke just swirling around?
Thank goodness you eat healthy. Healthy people don't have stinky stuff, so that's good.
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I've smelled some protein farts that are pretty awful.
No, protein's a little bit different, but vegans, they don't. It's not, this is a whole nother conversation, but
this
it's not
propaganda.
It's, I'm just saying,
right,
you don't kill yourself.
No.
Anyways, what's going on in the world of wrestling?
We have wrestling news.
Do we?
Break it down!
Whoa!
1-2-3-60 wrestling
Jeff
news.
On the spot in the booth.
So, another WWE superstar enters the world of MMA. So, Jack Swagger announced that he will be fighting in Bellator in 2018. He said he's been training for over 8 months, and he says he's contracted to do 6 fights.
Whoa, that's a huge contract.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. six fights, but not six fights all in the year 2018.
No,
I hope.
No, no. I hope not. Yeah.
I think he said he wants to have two fights in 2018.
Yeah, he
right?
Next year, yeah.
Good stuff for Jack. I'm really happy for him and happy for Bellator. Jack is actually one of the guys that I remember when Bellator was here when Chael Sonnen fought Tito Ortiz. Anyways, I was talking to Rich Chow, who's the matchmaker for Bellator. Mm-hmm. And I think Jack is one of the names that kind of came up as far as wrestlers that might, you know,
sure.
do well in MMA.
He may not be as big a name, although on par, but I think this is a way better sighting for Bellator than Ryback would have been.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Because Swagger's actually been in real fights.
Yeah, and you know, and his was a hell of an collegiate wrestler. Yeah. He's all American.
Yeah.
I would say that Ryback might have more of a infomercial presence of like,
absolutely.
Oh, we're gonna buy this pay-per-view because we want to see this crazy jacked up guy fight than Swagger does.
Also, I think Ryback was legitimately like a bigger name than Jack Swagger in WWE, at least at the point where they both left the company.
Yeah,
that's probably
even
true.
Even though Swagger held a world title and Ryback only ever held an Intercontinental title once, like I feel like Ryback was a bigger star overall.
Well, I think the way Ryback left also added to that.
Yeah.
Just like, no, I'm not coming because I'm not happy.
The thing about Jack is this, is like, he's a badass. There's no two ways about it. And even and you can tell on TV, but at the same time, he just always looks kind of like the old, like a lot of the All Japan, like, the Japanese guys, I used to notice like Misawa, for those like Misawa is a legendary Japanese wrestler that's no longer with us. Misawa, Kawada, a lot of those guys, they look like they just woke up out of bed and their music hit and they walked to the ring. Yeah. And Jack looks like that sometimes.
Just like cool, calm, and collected.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone and even the hair might be messed up. They just really, even their face looks like they might have just woke up.
Yeah, everyone who's a badass in Japan has that look.
Yeah.
Anita, Kobashi, like everybody.
Yeah.
Kenta.
I'm really excited for him. I know he had said that he'd been wanting to do this for a while, and this is his time. You know, he's like mid-30s, I believe. What was it, like 34?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is perfect for him. I think that also the fact that he went with Bellator is even better because I know Scott Coker will go ahead and find him some really good opponents.
That's right.
Protect him a little bit, you know, because, you know, he's known for that, which is great because I think that will give him, you know, a fair shot.
I think that there's a solid chance that he ends up, he like winds up in this Grand Prix they're doing next year.
I was wondering, like, because his announcement was right around the same time that they announced the tournament, right? So I'm thinking, I wonder if he's going to be in the tournament.
I think something's going to happen because the eight guys they have in the tournament right now are huge names, but it's going to be spread out over seven different events over the course of 2018, and one of those dudes is probably going to get injured.
Or
maybe they'll change their mind about Sonnen fighting at heavyweight and go with Swagger instead because Swagger's actually a heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious to see how Chael's definitely not ready to go up and
or have Swagger versus Chael for Swagger's first fight.
Oh,
because they're friends. I think that'd be a really
it was
good.
Actually. Boy, people will
for
people
his
will,
first fight.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that. People will be like. Automatically going like
fixes
the fix is, you know.
Yeah,
I mean it doesn't matter.
True, like, I'm just saying.
imagine what people would have been saying if Punk had won his first fight. Like
I'm just saying because they're friends,
right? Sure,
and you know Chael's like a you know definitely have step into the professional wrestling world anyways
for sure,
but. Anyways, so what else is going on?
So a WWE superstar might be making a return. So.
Yeah. Oh,
I like you, Jeff. So, according to PWInsider.com, they're reporting that Neville never really left. So, the whole thing a couple weeks ago that we were discussing that he walked out the show and we just didn't know what was happening. According to them, they said that he had outside projects that he was interested in and WWE wasn't kind of letting him, they were refusing to release him to do those projects, so he got frustrated and he left. According to them, he's coming back because he's still on contract and all that stuff. So,
I'm very happy to know that they ironed everything out or appears to be that way anyways.
Well, the other part of this is, so in the case of like Rey Mysterio and Daniel Bryan, when they got injured, there's clauses in WWE contracts that if you're injured, they can freeze the contract if they want. That's why Rey stayed an extra year past the time his contract was up. So if they're injured, they can freeze the contract. In Neville's case, he wasn't injured. He reportedly walked out And there was another report that came out before this PW Insider report that said that WWE was going to just keep him under contract and let the contract play out. So if that was the case, then it doesn't make any sense for Neville to just sit at home when the option of him being in WWE and on television is there. Like, if he has to play out his contract regardless of what's happening, why not be in the company? And that's
when he goes back to work, they just bury the living shit out of him.
I still think that from trying to make money on the indies perspective, it's better to remain visible until your contract's up, regardless of whether they're making you wear a baby diaper or whatever. Because people on the indies know who Pac is, but then there's the casual fan that's like, oh, I've seen this guy on TV a couple months ago or whatever, instead of I saw this guy on TV a year and a half ago.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't disagree with what you just said, by the way. Man.
It's a tough call.
Here's the thing, man. It's not always about the money you can make on the indies. It's about your sanity, Bill.
Sure. Mm-hmm,
it's
sure.
about when you get back there and they start effing with you and burying you. Yeah. You can go crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you love unhappy, what you're doing, yes. So that's what I'm really talking about. Yeah. You know, because creative satisfaction, I've said this before, it's highly underrated. Mm-hmm. Highly. It's right up there with money.
Oh, yeah. No, I
for anyone that's really good at this, it's pretty close to as important as the money. Pretty close. So
we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So, what? Up next. India is in for a big surprise. So it was announced. Triple H went on Twitter to let everybody know that Jinder Mahal and himself are going to be having battling it out in a match. So they had two matches. Now it's down to one. So I kind of feel like, do you think the fact that Jinder Mahal lost his belt, that would make a big difference to everything that's going on when they go to India for their matches?
It does. I guess it might make a difference just because, you know, the Indian people might want to see their guy carrying the championship. Has he had any matches in India as the champion?
No. They haven't been in India at all for a year or more. A couple of years, maybe.
So I was thinking that maybe he would be chasing the title over there, you know? But maybe that's not the case, right?
I mean, there's still time for him to win it back on a SmackDown or something before they head to India.
And here's the thing, though. At the same time, just to do good business in India, which they're going to do anyways, to build your whole, like, you know, WWE championship storyline around that just for the sake of one market, I don't think is a good idea.
Yeah.
When the news came out a couple days ago that they had reduced the two shows in India to one show, some people like were saying like, oh, well, obviously this means that the market's not as strong as they wanted it to be. And I was like, how in the world do you make that assumption?
Trust me, that's not the case.
Yeah.
As far as India is concerned, that's not the case.
Right.
But see, the thing is that there's so many people in India, obviously, but apparently from what I'm learning about the culture is that they're not used to paying for certain stuff that we are, versus like where we have to pay for certain subscriptions and all of that stuff. Apparently that's not like that big in India, so maybe that's part of the reason why, you know, they could have been like, you know, maybe we're not going to make all the money that we thought just because, you know, they're not used to paying for certain things.
Not sure. It's all speculation.
Yeah.
It could be a little bit of, you know, everything we're talking about here. The thing is, you teach the people. You got to train the people. And that, okay, these things right here. Okay, you pay for that. It's just that's just what you do. Like it's like teaching the people. you know, teaching the people that, hey, you throw money in the ring after you have a good match. Things like that, you know?
I think, too, it'll make a difference, too, when they see, lack of a better word, one of them. Then you're more kind of...
Yeah, your hometown hero. Yeah,
now you're more like, okay, well, I don't mind paying for this. It's kind of one of those things. And then you kind of see the scope of everything else that you can get with that subscription. So that would make sense.
It's also, I mean, that's true. Like, the culture is different as far as, like, paying for over-the-top services and, like, what people can afford and stuff. But also, like, when Ring King did its thing, like, they had however many tens of millions of people that watched Ring King in India. And it was like, 10 times the size of any North American wrestling audience ever, but the cost per million, like the CPM and like the value of those viewers is such a fraction of what the value of the viewers here is, that Rinka King like wasn't profitable or made like beyond its initial run. It didn't make sense to continue running it because like no matter how many tens of millions of people they had watching it wasn't enough.
There's got to be more to your revenue than just a TV contract when it comes to that. When I went there in 1995, we ran every show we ran was jam packed, and when we were in Bangalore, we ran an outdoor stadium held around 30,000 people. It was so packed, and this is kind of what happens over there. There's some, you know, there's corruption. Corruption everywhere, but especially there in like Mexico and stuff like that. The place was sold out well in advance, and security people were taking money and letting people in the side door. So the place was full before all the people with real tickets actually got in. Yes, and they jammed everyone in there, and there was actually structural damage to the stadium. Wow. Yeah.
Who was on top for that?
Bret Hart.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who was he?
He was the champion.
Do you know who he... Tiger Ollie
said? I can't even... he wasn't even working for the company then, but I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Well, do you think advertisers are afraid to put money and ads into companies like this because people there don't have the money to spend on their ads?
Now, listen, let me tell you something.
There's money there.
Okay. There's a billion plus people there, okay? And yeah, tons of them. Tons of them are dirt poor. But when you got a billion some people, there's still an asinine amount of really rich people there. Mm-hmm. So trust me, there's tons of money.
So is it better to do like a, what's his name? I can't think of his name. Where they have personal shows, like the rich people pay to have a show just for them.
Well, WWE, that's not in their interest.
Yeah. It's not the best example I could think of is like when I went to Kenya. So when you think of Kenya or Africa in general, there's just, you think of poor people and all this other stuff. But there are people who have jobs, they have cars, they have houses, they have apartments. There are people that are living just like us, but you never see that because all they see when you see Africa is starving kids with big bellies. So it's kind of the same thing. You know, I know I have my brother's married to an Indian woman, like their family is very well off. So it's just kind of like, I know it's just kind of every country has the same kind of dynamic.
Yeah. Power, it's like what I was thinking. Yeah, Power
Udi. I mean, there's the caste system there, and that's like just how it works there. Yeah. But trust me, even like in this country and other countries, in its own way, we have our own freaking caste system.
Oh. Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Well, what you were talking about, like training the people, it's getting the product into that country, and then once it's in that country, training the people who can afford it to like it.
That's the thing. Yeah, it's just like in Mexico, when WWE goes to Mexico, wrestling fans, there's a crossover between Lucha fans and WWE fans, okay? But a ton of, like, you know, CMLL... you know, Arena Mexico, whatever, all the
the diehards?
No, just all the like national like companies Mexico. They get the fans that are the poor people there, you know, the ones that there's actually a name they call them Nacos, which is kind of a derogatory name, but it's like the really, really poor. Have you ever heard that expression?
I actually haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Well, even today.
What I was going to say was this. A lot of the people that go to the Lucha shows can't afford to go to WWE.
Right.
And they don't even know who a lot of the WWE stars are.
Sure.
So...
could be too, for instance, like a subscription like Netflix, for instance. When I go to Canada, even though I have a Netflix account, it's you have some of the shows that are the same, but some of them shows are Canadian-based. So that might be, I don't know if WWE does the same thing with different countries, but that might be something that they want to...
Well, they recently launched that new Saudi show
in
Saudi Arabia, like that's specific to that. Like there's a show that only runs in Germany, there's a show that only runs in France. Like they.
So if you get the subscription, then you can kind of see the other things as well, or...
Yeah, but like they like on local television, they have like the Saudi shows on local television.
Okay.
Well, like in Europe, NXT used to run on normal television.
Yeah,
they would
have to make a separate show for Saudi Arabia and some of those countries over there, just because they're so much different culturally and the things that are accepted culturally.
Yeah, that's what they do. Like the Saudi show and the German show, like they, it's basically like primetime wrestling kind of, where they have a host in the studio who like present it with the context of the.
Because I can't even imagine like them having the ladies wrestling. Do they show ladies wrestling there?
I mean,
you can't drive.
They go there on the tours.
Do they
go to Dubai and UAE and all that?
I remember being able to drive
this year, I believe.
I just remember back in if you're actually a robot, a female robot, you can get citizenship there.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
Speaking of other shows, were you going to say something else? So Triple H. He is going to be the fifth member of Team Raw.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this? So it's going to, they've kind of rounded out almost all the Survivor Series except for the women's division, I think, on SmackDown because of the title championship. But he's been doing more work in the ring recently. Do you think that's kind of a thing that happens all the time? Or
It happens all the time whenever he wants to, you know, get ready to get back in the ring on TV. And you know, I could tell, I think I saw a picture of him that he's bulking up a little bit more, just, you know, getting his body dialed in. Yeah. So,
I think this is sowing the seeds for the WrestleMania match between him and Kurt.
Was it originally supposed to be Jason Jordan all along?
I think it was originally supposed to be Roman Reigns, but then he got the mumps.
Yeah, well, and that's how, you know, I was talking about how when you replace them with somebody of equal or, I just about knocked the coffee over again.
You might want to scoot that over.
Equal or greater value, right? Remember I was telling you about how they replaced Razor with Roddy when I was having the program with Scott? So, bringing then Triple H to replace Jason Jordan is... I think that people will consider that equal or greater value.
I don't think he was ever, like, I think it was planned that he wouldn't be there. Like, Jason Jordan was like almost like a
placeholder. I think it's just like, who are they going to replace him with?
Right.
I think the assumption was it was going to be Roman Reigns. And everyone was wondering, like, is he going to be ready in time to replace Jason Jordan? But I think this is setting up the Kurt Triple H, because they had Stephanie come out and force Kurt to replace Jason Jordan, and then he still wouldn't. So then Triple H had to come out, and he was the one to do it, and then he pedigreed Jordan in front of Kurt. So I think that's going to end up being what is the beginning of that match that's going to happen at WrestleMania.
I do like the build up to it, though, compared to other pay per views, as far as how, you know, they're having the matches and how everything's kind of coming into play. Like, I'm really looking forward to this one. So
I think the card's going to be amazing. I don't think any of it has made much sense, but I think that the card's going to be amazing.
Probably.
Yeah, I feel like all the little changes we've been seeing for Survivor Series so far have just been getting better and better. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm so glad this happened. Yeah. Okay, great. This is awesome. Yeah. So I'm really happy that, you know, that we're going to be seeing Triple H.
Any, how you guys felt about the Under Siege, was that part 3 from Raw?
I don't think any of it has made sense at all. But it doesn't matter. Like, they're just making moments.
It's just fun to see the randomness that happens.
They should have had Steven Seagal just lurking in the background.
All right.
Let's, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a break right now, and then we're going to come back with William Patrick Corrigan.
What's up, party people? Roxy Stryer here from The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. We're your twice weekly broadcast of one man's midlife crisis and the mad millennials in Star Trek uniforms that follow him.
And I'm one of those millennials, Lauren LeGrasso here. We've had some amazing guests like Russell Simmons, Ileana Douglas, and Craig Gass. Coolio, right?
Christian Blatt in the house to tell you to go to thetomorrowshow.com to check us out. We're live every Monday and Thursday from 10 to midnight Eastern. That's thetomorrowshow.com. Be there or be square, whatever that means.
Hey, X-Pac 12360 fans. I just wanted to tell you two ways that you can support the show to help it grow. First, if you've ever wanted a shout-out or surprise message for various occasions from me, all you have to do is visit celebvm.com/Sean Waltman to request a video today. Not only does it support the show, but a portion of the proceeds go to charity. Second, to visit ProWrestlingTees.com/Sean Waltman. That's the only place to grab shirts with the X-Pac 12360 logo, Wolfpack, or many other designs. If you pick up a shirt, make sure to tweet us using the hashtag X-Pac 12360. That's celebvm.com/Sean Waltman for a personal message from me, X-Pac. And prowrestlingtees.com/Sean Waltman for X-Pac, Wolfpack, and X-Pac 12360 gear. Thanks for supporting the show. Now let's get back to it. Welcome back to X-Pac 12360, everyone. Joining us right now on the telephone is a phenomenal musician and a huge, huge wrestling fan, and he's now the owner of the National Wrestling Alliance, William Patrick Corrigan, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Billy. Hello.
I don't know. I'm here.
Oh, hey.
Swear to God, I'm here.
Hey, Billy. How are you, man?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Thank you for, thanks for coming on, man. Hey, it was great seeing you this weekend, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and, what an amazing acoustic set you had. I only saw the last one you did on Sunday, but you had 4 days of those, huh? At the Hollywood Cemetery.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I played, I think, 115 songs over 4 days, so it was pretty mind-bending.
The one that I did, the David Bowie Space Odyssey cover, was amazing. Amazing, man.
Except me messing up and having to stop.
That was the best part! Come on, Billy, you know that those are the moments that are the really cool moments, man.
And then, I don't know. Okay, you blow a spot in the ring, and you look at the crowd, and you go, excuse me, hold on one second.
Yeah. And then so it's just Billy, right? It's just Billy, and that's it. There's nothing else, just Billy, a couple of lights, guitar, and a piano. And then he comes back, and he goes, smoke and mirrors. Excuse me, please show me the smoke and mirrors, Billy. And he goes, you have your trade secrets, I have mine. Hey, Billy, you were involved with TNA Impact or whatever you want to call it. But I remember in 2002 when I was there helping get that promotion going, and they ran into money problems. Do you remember your name coming up as someone they were going to try to reach out to way back then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember reading that in the dirt sheets back then and thinking, who, me?
Yeah, well, I was the one that mentioned your name to them.
it's your fault I'm still in wrestling.
That's right. So how are things going with the NWA so far, Billy?
Great, honestly. We're off to a really good start with the reboot, and been really excited by fans' responses so far, and just the beginning, excuse me, it's the beginning of a long set of ideas that we have, and we're just rolling them out one piece at a time, because we really don't want to get into the thing of trying to compete with other people's ideas.
Sure.
Of what a wrestling company needs to be in 2017, nor do we feel the need to make the mistakes that a lot of other people have made, which is, run before you can walk.
Yeah. Are you going to try to have like the old National Wrestling Alliance, where you have members, different promotions being members, or is it going to be different now?
I think it really will ultimately depend on what kind of TV deal situation we land in.
Yeah.
I think if we end up running truly independent, which at the moment that looks like where it's going to go, then I think the idea of having satellite promotions works really, really well. And I have had those conversations with people. I think if we get a national wrestling platform, I think a lot of our energy then would be going to figure out how to make that work, because as we all know, overall ratings on a lot of sports is coming down.
Yep.
As people move more and more to cutting the cord, internet viewing. And I feel very good about the future of wrestling as a sort of a media thing, but at the same time, the traditional form of, hey, I got to sit on this couch on Monday night and sit for 3 hours and watch how this all plays out, that's getting harder and harder to pull an audience for. We certainly went through that at TNA when I was there. And
right.
So maybe wrestling won't be that, 10 years from now. Maybe we'll have become something completely different.
Huh. Well, I really like the idea of you hooking up with Marquez at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, because like we were talking about at some point this weekend, he has over 100. He's in over 100 markets around the country, and it's all syndicated markets, and it's just such a different way of doing it, compared to the way everyone else is doing it now.
Well, I think Dave's smart in that he's taken advantage of a market that people assumed was dead as far as wrestling. In essence, the idea that wrestling would work again as a local affiliate thing like we all grew up on, I think that Dave identified that that market still existed or it could be brought back, and he's done a really good job of rebuilding it one station at a time and creating, you know, specialized programming for different markets. And I think that fits really nicely with what we're trying to do with NWA at this point. And so we're really happy to work with Dave. He's been nothing but great to work with. And, you know, we want to also support him. I think the future of wrestling from the independent side is that people really do need to work together.
Yes.
It behooves everybody to pull their resources together. WWE obviously is the gold star, and they take up a lot of oxygen in the market, as they should.
Yeah.
They have every right to. They've earned that. And more power to them. But for the rest of us out here, we have to figure out how to work together to compete in a marketplace that isn't just the WWE, but is, you know, football games and, you know, I mean, shit, lacrosse is on TV now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead, Denise.
So, Billy, when it comes to rebuilding NWA, what is it like trying to find a balance between keeping tradition of the company but also trying to come up with some new and innovative ways?
I think you start from the idea that NWA represents something to people, particularly who are, like, say, over 35. In my mind, it means, a certain style of wrestling, a certain type of performer. And so you keep that in mind as far as how you want to present. I'm a firm believer that you always want to build it around guys who have size. I think that sells, particularly to kids. We all remember the first time we saw Andre the Giant. You know, that stuff sticks in your mind. As we were joking, you know, the elephant, when the circus went out of business, when they got rid of the elephants, you know.
No kidding.
So, right. So we start there, but we also have to understand that in 2017, the way people view their content is much different. A lot of people now are watching things on their phone. Their attention span is really short. A lot of times people make decisions within the first 4 to 10 seconds of whether or not they want to keep watching something that maybe you spent a lot of money and a lot of time on to get to 10 minutes. So it's going to grab them right out of the box. So you have to move at a 21st century pace. But I think the tradition of the NWA is around kind of a bruising big guy style. And I don't have any problem sort of building around that.
Huh. Billy, I really enjoyed the vignettes that Dave Lagana made. They were really, really unique and They really made me like Tim Storm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have this, if anybody gets a chance, we have on our NWA channel, we have a series called 10 Pounds of Gold, where we sort of spotlight not only what the heavyweight title means, but also Tim Storm as the champion that we inherited from the Bruce Tharp era of the NWA. And a lot of people assume that we were just going to discard Tim.
Yeah.
And
I was one of them.
Okay, and we took a look at it, and we thought, no, you know, there's actually a really interesting story here, and let's just let it play out. And getting to know Tim and working with Tim has been a total pleasure. He's a class act. He's been a wrestler for 20 years, so
yep.
He understands the tradition that we're after, and I like him being involved with the NWA for years to come, even if he should decide to retire here along the way. I hope he'll be part of our family. So. I like the story that we're telling, and I hope people get a chance to sort of pick up on the story. We plan on sort of working this asymmetrical TV strategy where we put up these documentaries and keep people clued in. We're about to run another storyline this weekend that should be going up any second. So it's episodic television just like anything else, you know. So hopefully people will subscribe and follow along.
Where's the next stop on like the, if you want to call it a tour or whatever, for Tim Storm as NWA champion?
He has a match coming up this, I believe it's this Friday in Clarksville, at Tennessee at Crimson's promotion.
Oh, okay.
And so that's sort of his next chapter, and we'll be following that. So the cool thing is if you're following along in sort of documentary style, we'll be there with cameras, and so you get to see how the whole day plays out. So there's a bit of a shoot feel behind the scenes, but you also get to see how the storylines play out, just like typical wrestling television.
So with 10 pounds of gold, how important is it to have, you know, the belt on the spotlight, you know, before the launch of the NWA?
Well, look, when you connect the tradition of that belt, I mean, I think that gets everyone's attention. Now, you have to be careful because you can't suddenly start acting like, you know, you've got Jack Briscoe and Terry Funk and Dory and Dusty waiting in the wings. You know, not only do you have to rebuild your talent pool, but you have to rebuild what the belt means in popular culture. Again, to anybody over 35, I mean, they know what that belt means. I mean, that belt is a very, very important belt as a historical lineage. But, you know, the belt has not been always taken care of here over the last 10, 20 years. And so we also have to rebuild what the belt means in the wrestling community.
And, you know, you were talking about how, okay, it's not, you know, we don't have Jack Briscoe or this guy or that. But, you know, with Tim Storm, you painted a picture, and it's an authentic picture. You're not trying to, you guys haven't tried to pass Tim Storm off as something he's not. I think you've done an excellent job at that.
I think that's the beauty of it is I think what it shows is I think the modern audience can respect somebody's journey if their journey is authentic.
Yep.
And, not everybody's journey is Jimi Hendrix or Ric Flair, you know? There's 1,000 different stories to tell, and you can tell them. I mean, who would have thought 20 years ago that Breaking Bad would have been a huge series? You know what I mean? Who would have thought in 2017 that fans would get behind a 53-year-old wrestler who's a school teacher?
True. But he looks so much better now than he did 20-some years ago. See, I remember, like, once I saw him the other night, like, it started coming back to me. I remember him being at TVs and different things like that. It's just he looks 10 times better now than he did when he was younger.
I think I believe him when he says that the NWA championship changed his life and it made him want to be a better person, a better man, and a better professional wrestler. So that belt means so much to him that he devoted himself to be the best version of himself he can be. Yeah. So he's peaking right now at 53, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
But he's having the best ride of his life. He's having the best run of his life. And he deserves it. He's put his time in. He's arrived at the right spot. And look, we're not a, you know, this is not a charity. I mean, this is a business, as you know. I mean, you've lived it. And right now he's carrying us forward where we want to go, and we want to ride with him. And I'm pleased to be in business with him. And again, a true professional.
Hey, Billy, you're working with Rick Rubin again now, huh? And you worked with him on your latest album, right?
Yeah, Rick produced the album that's out now called OG Lala. It's a sort of acoustic, kind of a little bit of a mellower record, but probably the best received record I've had probably in about 20 years. Sweet. So it's been quite a great thing, and working with Rick's been amazing. And, you know, the funny thing is, and it pertains to what we're talking about, all Rick wanted to talk about between takes of doing the album was wrestling.
That's why I brought it up, because I was wondering if Rick had anything behind the scenes to do with this or is helping you out with this.
No, but he certainly gave me a lot of good advice. You know, Rick's a really brilliant man, and as somebody who's really a fan of the business, he gave me some really good advice. He loved the idea of bringing back the NWA as a sort of a bruising, old-school style promotion.
Sure.
And I think what little we've seen so far is proving that that's true, that there are a lot of people out there who feel that there's a place in wrestling for that again. And, you know, look, I'm a big fan of the Lucha style and the Japanese strong style. I mean, I love all that stuff, but I don't know. When I see two big bulls in the ring going at it, I mean, that brings me back to watching, you know, Dick the Bruiser and,
oh, sure,
and Ox Baker and all those guys. I mean, it takes me right back into when I fell in love with wrestling, so it works for me.
Ox Baker. I like to beat people up.
The heart punch. I mean, one of the great finishers of all time.
Oh, and he had the painted toenails, too. Did you ever notice that about him?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, no, that was one of the things about Ox that, like, people knew, like, many years ago, that he always painted his toenails back at a time when men, you know, that just didn't happen, so.
Are there any wrestlers in other federations or on the indies that fit this character that you would like to see in NWA?
Can you rephrase that? Sorry, I'm not sure I totally understand.
Are there any wrestlers in other promotions, maybe like a Ring of Honor, that you would like to see in the NWA that fit this old Dick the Bruiser style character that you're looking for?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's people everywhere that I would love to work with. I think it just gets into who's available and when they're available. And, you know, I'll give you a little insight. It's a little different thing than you're asking, but, you know, I've seen some criticism already about, well, they're not doing that much, and, you know, they're just working with a couple guys. It's like, look, I got plenty of money. I could go out and blow a lot of money, sign a lot of people, but We have a long road here. I mean, this is a 20-year plan to rebuild the NWA. First, we need to restore what the belt means in people's minds. we need to find the right talent. And I don't think we should be in a more aggressive position than the marketplace is ready to bear. It takes a long time. And again, anybody under 35 probably has never even heard of the NWA. They think it's a rap group, you know? So it takes time. But yeah, trust me, I've got my eye on a lot of people, but not everybody's available, and nor could I offer them always what they're worth in the open market. So hopefully we'll find the right talent at the right times. But right now, you know, working with Nick Aldis, you know, who used to be Magnus in TNA, I mean, the guy is, I mean, you saw him the other day, Sean. I mean, he looks phenomenal right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's in the best shape of his life, and his work is fantastic. He's a great person. I know him very well. I've been friends with his wife, Mickey, for years. And it's a total pleasure to work with Nick, too. So, and we've got other people we're about to sign. And, yeah, we're really, really excited about where we're going.
It was cool when we were at the Hollywood Cemetery the other night. Damian Sandow, a.k.a. Aaron Rex, showed up. Yeah. And that would be a good guy to have in the NWA, Billy.
Yeah, no, he's a friend of mine, and we've certainly talked to him about doing stuff. He's really particularly interested in being able to run creatively free.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that's shown when he's allowed to run his world the way he wants, he gets over with fans. He looks phenomenal. He's still in great shape. He hasn't worked a lot this last year, so his body is really healed up. I think the question with him is not whether or not he'd work with us. I think the question is whether he still wants to be involved in professional wrestling, because he's obviously had some bitter experiences along the way.
But I think he does. Just from talking to him, I think he doesn't. It just seems like it would be a good fit. It was funny, he was telling me a story about Rick Rubin coming up to him and said he should be a magician. But he meant it as like a character in wrestling, right?
Yeah, it was great, because I had my 50th birthday party in L.A., and Sandow was there, Eli Drake was there, EC3 was there, Chris Nowinski was there, you know, who was Chris Harvin in WWE, who's a friend of mine now working in concussion research. So we were laughing because we had a pretty good main event roster at my birthday party.
Sounds great, man. Damn, Chris Nowinski. Side note, my brain is being donated to the Boston University concussion study when I die, so...
He actually brought that up last night when I saw him.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said to make sure that I brought it up to you. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to bring up your brain donation in the course of this conversation. So I'm glad that you did. But that's fantastic that you're doing that, because that's really important research. And you know, look, as somebody who loves the business and is involved in the business, your health is, you know, you're my friend, and your health and the people I work with is really important to me. So the more focus we can get on this research and figuring out ways to treat CTE, which is obviously the thing that's causing a lot of these issues, that's a really important issue. And I think it's going to become a much bigger issue with professional wrestling as we go along.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I just, truthfully, Billy, I feel some cognitive impairment, and I know it's not from the drugs. It's just something you deal with, though, you know, and you know, I just try to, from now on, I just try not to do any more damage to myself, but I just think there's a lot of things that can be done since we're talking about concussions. I think there's a lot of preventative things that can be done that are not being done.
Like wearing...
Yeah, I think that's the difficulty is, you know, and let's speak about the wider arc of sports culture. We've all been in that situation, you know, me when I was an athlete, when I was younger, you know, where you get hurt and somebody kind of pressures you to get back into a situation that you're not physically capable of handling. And now we know from all the research with concussions, the worst thing you can do if you're dinged up is to get back in there.
Yeah. And the thing is like we, as an athlete, we want to put ourselves back in the game, even though we're not, we shouldn't be. So, I mean, we need somebody to tell us no, you know?
Yeah, Chris once told me, this is Chris Nowinski I'm speaking of, because he's, you know, he's obviously at the forefront of this research. They have found that the natural reaction of somebody who's been concussed, it's a fight or flight response. They actually are flooded with a certain type of endorphins, which makes them, which convinces them that they're actually all right.
Yep.
So it's an actual natural response to think you're okay. And they think what it is it goes back to ancient times of humans, that if they had been, say, injured in the forest or something, the reason the body convinces itself okay is that they would be able to get out of danger.
Yeah. That makes sense.
They would still be able to function sort of, you know, for another 10 minutes. But the actual response where an athlete will say, no, I'm actually okay, is actually part of the body's response to the concussion.
Yeah. Hey, it's it's really, it's just so much when it comes to that. There's just so much we don't know yet, and that. But.
Oh, we're at early days of this research, you know. And what's funny is it's, and you know, this is a, you know, this is a topic that we all, you know, need to consider. If say that somebody has a banged up knee and can't work, I mean, what's crazy is a brain injury isn't treated the same as a knee injury.
That's true. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, you go to somebody, hey, I can't walk, I can't move, I can't run. They say, okay, well, we'll hide you in a tag match or something. You know what I mean? But like a brain injury is treated like a toughness issue, generally speaking.
Yeah, shake it off. Come on, you'll be fine. Get back in there. Yep. I definitely know what that's like. Go ahead, Denise.
So do you think coming from another industry and then coming into the wrestling world is what kind of is keeping you so open-minded and like trying new things outside the box?
That's a great question. It's a combination of things. One, I came to wrestling with a lot of ideas that maybe weren't built on knowledge. And then having been in the wrestling business for a while, I've been able to kind of synergize the reality of the business versus my sort of ideas. And then other times also I've had some of my ideas being outside the box work, and I had people in the industry push back against me, which is kind of weird. It gets into that kind of thing of like, well, that's not the way things are done, which very much reminds me of my music career, which I used to hear that with my band. You know, don't play that type of music, or you can't do that, or you can't make that type of video. And I would always think, why not? What I love about wrestling is it really has an unlimited level of creativity, depending on who you work with and the ideas that you have. And I feel very bright about what the future of wrestling can be for myself and the NWA, because now I have nobody standing in front of my way with my crazy ideas. And if they work, great. And if they don't, well, I'm willing to take the responsibility because it was my idea. I've definitely been in other situations, particularly at TNA, where I brought a lot of ideas to the table and I was shut down, not because the ideas were bad, but because they didn't fall within the traditional realm of how wrestling is presented.
Some of those ideas that you did manage to get through are really cool, though. Like, I mean, what was the deal with the ladies that were like kind of like, I don't know, what the hell was it? They were like gothic or like.
Oh, are you talking about TNA?
Yeah.
Talking about Decay?
Oh, you're talking about the Decay, the Decay faction?
Yes, yeah.
Rosemary,
yeah. All of that stuff.
Steve.
Yeah, that was
right.
Really well, cool stuff.
Was
Billy.
Rosemary entirely your creation?
No, but I had a lot to do with it, and much talent to the woman who plays Rosemary. You know, is incredibly talented. I mean, probably one of the most talented performers I've worked with, male or female. Incredibly talented woman. Yeah, the idea was interesting. It was one of those classic things where somebody in the company came up with the idea of using a gothic type wrestler, and my first thought was of Daphne, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, how are we going to make sure we're not just going to sort of do a Daphne retread, mostly out of respect to Daphne? And they said, no, we want it to be more like this. And then they said, you know about this stuff, like you kind of handle it since you seem to have a strong opinion about it. And so together with Holly, who plays Rosemary in Impact Wrestling, we kind of mapped out this character that was more of like a Comic-Con Wizard World type person, like one of those people who shows up all dressed up.
Oh, cosplayer.
Gimmick, you know? Yeah, more like a cosplayer gimmick. And she had done some cosplaying on her own in real life. So she was pretty familiar and said, you're kind of almost describing me as I really am. So she felt very comfortable with adapting this character. So we talked a lot about the inner psychology, which I think really played out in the vignettes that we did. And then we built the Decay faction around her, made her the focal point because she's so fantastic on the microphone and so fantastic as a focal point. Using Abyss as the muscle and Crazy Steve as sort of the guy who was sort of obsessed with her, sort of like the love interest who never gets the girl but will do anything that the girl says, you know, because he wants her so bad or she's his ideal woman or however we worked that out. I mean, it was amazing. And then here's a quick funny story. We were talking about what music we were going to use, and I was talking to Crazy Steve, and I said, do you have anything in mind? And he said, well, there's this Marilyn Manson song that would, if we could find a song like this song, it would be awesome. And I said, well, why don't I just call Marilyn Manson and see if we can use the song?
Yeah.
And 2 hours later, they were walking down the ramp to the song, and they just were like, they were like, we can't believe you got this song for us. This is just insane. And the song took off immediately. The gimmick took off immediately. And it was one of those things, and it's a shame that it got broken up under the last regime. They broke up the gimmick right away, which was totally crazy to me. I don't mean to criticize the product, but obviously that was a creative decision. But it was insane because the gimmick was so over, and it was a perfect balance of Abyss, Crazy Steve, and Rosemary, where everybody was like the Beatles. The three of them all got equal reactions from the crowd. They were all over, and it's a shame they didn't get more out of that gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, you just brought up Abyss, and what a talent, man. Like, as Abyss, he's great, and as Joseph Park, he's great. What a freaking talent that guy is. How was that to work with him, man?
You know, what's interesting about Abyss is, you know, he he's a big guy, and you know, he can do all the big guy stuff, but he's really a thinking man's wrestler. He really understands the game. Probably the best agent I've ever worked with. Most people don't know a lot of the main events for the last, God, I don't know how many years, but like a lot of those big main events, that would be Abyss booking those main events as an agent. Nice. So he really is an incredibly talented man and a friend and somebody I really enjoyed working with.
How's this is my Abyss impression. I love you, Billy. Are you mad at me?
Well, you're bringing back a lot of memories over there at the Ale House.
Billy, I don't know how.
It's about 2 a.m. He's had a couple of drinks and a couple of cigarettes, and he's telling me he loves me.
Billy, I don't know how closely you followed it, but what's your take on what Lucha Underground is doing with the suspension of disbelief and choosing to treat wrestling more cinematically?
I think it's fantastic. I think what they've done is truly groundbreaking. I mean, certainly it influenced, not crazily directly, but it certainly showed it could work with what we did with the Broken Hardys, the Broken Universe with the Hardys. Mm-hmm. I think wrestling is due for a renaissance. I think wrestling needs to look more like television of 2017.
Do you think that there's a space in NWA for that sort of storytelling, or are you looking to get more back to basics?
I think our general thought is we would like to get there, but I think we need to reestablish, let's call it, the core look and feel of the NWA. I know it can work, but I also think, let me put it to you this way. When you look at the Broken Hardys gimmick, which was obviously a really, really successful thing last year, you know, it was a great idea. We had a lot of fun doing it, you know, Borash with the drone and doing all sorts of crazy stuff that we would sit and think of. And Abyss actually had a lot to do with that too sometimes. We would sit and sort of riff on these ideas.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also need a Matt Hardy to pull it off. You know, you can't just hand stuff like that to just anybody, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. You can't just take any run-of-the-mill indie wrestler and tell them that they're living in a broken universe and they got to take the fans on this crazy journey. So it's much credit to the Lucha performers who were able to do that, and to someone like Matt Hardy and Jeff, of course, to take you into a world that was very, very personal.
Did you ever think it would get as over as it did?
No, but I will say that it's very interesting. It's a little inside baseball. After the first week that we did it, the internet world was split 50-50. Those who loved it, and those who hated it absolutely hated it. They thought it was the worst thing they'd ever seen. They thought breaking the fourth wall was an atrocious idea. They just were all over it. And I got some pressure from inside TNA management at the time to kill it right off the bat. And I've been around enough things in my own life to know when you're on to something. In essence, when you have a reaction that is that visceral, you have something to play with. And the fact that there was negative heat on it, to me, I didn't see as a bad thing. That meant people were talking. And at that point, anybody talking about TNA was a good thing. So I had to fight really hard to keep it going. And so then after that point, then when it took off, it didn't surprise me because I knew that first week reaction was could only be built upon. And that's why we went crazier and wilder from there, because it fed into that. It was like feeding a fire that was already going pretty strong.
Man, it was just insane. I remember I went to Ron Funch's house and watched it with him because I hadn't seen it before. And I was just blown away by it. It was just so over the top, crazy, outside the box stuff. You know, I mean, that, like you were talking about that drone and like shooting bottle rockets up the drone. I mean, come on, that's genius stuff, Billy.
One of my favorite spots that Matt came up with was we had this whole idea that there was going to be this confrontation, face-to-face confrontation between Rosemary and Matt Hardy, or Broken Matt. And Matt came up with the spot that he would absorb the mist and blow it back at her.
Yes.
I mean, just so brilliant. Matt is so brilliant.
Do you know they did that? Quang and Undertaker did that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in a match.
Oh, I didn't know
Saudi
that.
Omega yes. Quang?
Yes, it was at I want to say it was at TB's in Lowell, Massachusetts. It doesn't matter what the building was, but Quang spit the mist at Undertaker. And Undertaker spit it back at him. It was such a cool spot. But I don't. I think it's just parallel thinking. I don't think it was stolen from that.
Yeah. And see, what was cool about it from a booking standpoint is, you know, usually when you have a man confronting a woman, a babyface man confronting a heel woman, you know, especially with the rules of television and stuff, you know, there's not much he can do to her. You know what I mean? It's not like he can pick up a brick and hit her in the head. So that was such a cool way to create, for her to get her comeuppance from him without any violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy, earlier you were talking about how much Abyss does behind the scenes that people don't know about. Another person that was doing a ton at Impact that people probably aren't aware of is Rockstar Spud, and the rumor is that he's now going to be heading over to WWE. What are your thoughts on Spud?
Well, first off, I mean, I can't believe they let him go. Probably one of the most talented people in the building. Mm-hmm. Literally can do anything. You know, let's set aside his size because that, you know, he's obviously not a big guy. But beyond his size, I mean, there isn't anything he can't do. He's a great talker. He's a great ring tactician. He can put together a great match. He's capable of working in any spot you put him in.
He's a hell of a baby face and a hell of a heel.
Mm-hmm.
He really is a super talented guy, so I can't believe he's out of the building. But that said, their loss will be absolutely to be WWE's gain. I think, from what I know about WWE world, I think he will find his place and he will excel in it. You know, my respect for WWE is when they find talented people, they tend to keep them in the building, even if they got to move them around in different roles if the wrestling side doesn't go the way that the talent would like. So I feel very happy for Spud. I feel he'll absolutely excel in that environment.
So when Anthem finally came into the picture, did they ever approach you to stay with the company, or had you at this point already made up your mind that you were going to do your own thing?
That's a very interesting question because it gets super complicated with the lawsuit that I had filed. Because at that point, Anthem was sort of on the other side of the fence, representing the interests of their own at that time. Because they were a minority owner, as was this company called Aerolux, which was doing the production, and then Dixie Carter. So in essence, they all lined up against me in order for the lawsuit to be made to go away. But it was Anthem who settled the lawsuit with me, since they were going to be taking over the company. And so the minute the lawsuit and all that stuff was settled and the money was all worked out, I got on the phone with Ed, who runs Anthem. And I basically said, look, there's no hard feelings, and I feel like we're going to be in business together. I think I'm going to be buying the NWA. And so we're in constant talks with them about working with them at various levels. I guess I'm not involved in the company in any kind of day-to-day way. I don't have anything to do with the creative anymore. But I am involved with the company in the sense that we have maintained contact over the last year, both in sort of a kind of a general advisory role of me giving him my free opinion as far as what I think they could do better, because obviously Ed's spoken very publicly about, you know, this has been his introduction into the wrestling business, and sometimes it's a bit confusing with the personalities and the forces at play. But secondarily, also sort of feeling there might be a play there involving talents and being involved, you know, in what I was saying before, is from the independent view, is that people need to work together, and I would work with anybody, including WWE, if it was the right situation for the NWA.
Billy, if you don't want to comment on this, that's totally fine, but someone recently this week tallied up the figure, and since the changeover to Anthem, 40 talents have left Impact Wrestling. 40. And I don't know if that says anything to you about the direction the company's headed.
Well, there's two things there. I mean, I think on one hand, when someone's handed the keys to a company, in this case, Anthem, and then whoever they choose to run the sort of the wrestling operations, it's their decision who they want to bring in and in what direction they want to take the company in. So, look, anybody can say it's a good thing, a bad thing, but at the end of the day, it's really more based politically around who's in charge and what vision they have for the company going forward. The other thing has obviously got to do with financial stuff, where they've tried to bring the costs, which under the Dixie era were, you know, wildly out of control. The company was running at a loss, and it was unsustainable. Obviously, that's how Dixie ended up in the situation where she started offering me a piece of the company, and I ended up running the company for a period of time because the debt situation had completely spiraled out of control. And as I contended in my court case, the debt was far more significant than Dixie was letting on. Which I would argue was borderline criminal,
because
you know, my lawyers found debt that they had hidden off the books. Mm-hmm. So it got super complicated. That's all been resolved. So Anthem deserves a lot of credit for bringing the budgets back under control and continuing the company. And so some of that stuff is obviously just financial, and you know, it's easy to criticize from a fan point of view because, you know, you want the best talent there if you're a fan, because you want to see the best people doing the best job. And that's not to disparage anybody that's there. There's still a lot of talented people on that roster. It's obviously just trying to reel the business in.
It just doesn't look like there's not much about that company that even looks similar to how it was, you know, a year ago or even 6 months ago. That's the thing about it.
I think the only thing left is a six-sided ring.
Maybe. Yeah, even the seamstress I don't think is there anymore. But I like that they brought things like production-wise back to Canada. I think that's kind of cool to have a pro wrestling, a big wrestling company, a major promotion, well, considered one of the major promotions, actually based in Canada and doing things up there. It's good for the Canadian wrestling fans.
I think that's a plus. I think the fact that they'll be able to take advantage of some of the Canadian tax laws to you know, if you're a Canadian company and you run, you use Canadian talent, you know, you get a significant tax breaks. Mm. And so again, I think it's just wisdom to try to keep the company solvent.
I'm sorry, Billy. Do you picture yourself as NWA being involved with them again?
We're in constant discussions with them about ways to work together. We're willing to talk to anybody who wants to be in business with us. We feel we've had a lot to offer. What makes the TNA situation or Impact situation unique is, if you remember, the belt was originally NWA TNA.
Oh yeah.
The original belt was actually based on the NWA belt, and the lineage ran through there, including AJ Styles holding that belt. So there is a history there with the NWA that is easily brought back together as far as it pertains to fans. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But, you know, again, running an asymmetrical strategy as far as how to create content for the NWA in the 21st century, again, we're willing to work with anybody that's up and running and like Dave Marquez, has a stage and has talent.
And it seems like you're not like rigid to where you can't like adjust or I'm drawing a blank on how to say this, but it just seems like you're willing to go in just about any direction that it takes you.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say this, and I don't mean this in any kind of boorish way, and I'm repeating myself a little bit. I could just blow my own money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think that really will serve the company in the long run, and I also think we want to figure out how to work in this 21st century environment, and I do believe that working with other promotions is just good for business for everybody. I mean, look, it's about internet matchup. So would you, after following the 10 pounds of gold, would you be interested in seeing, say, Tim Storm face Bobby Lashley?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
If you're following
sure.
the NWA story, okay, maybe you are interested in seeing one of the best professional wrestlers in the world and one of the biggest, baddest men on the planet, Bobby Lashley, face our champ. Could our champ survive a Lashley? That's an interesting storyline. Now, would it work well for Impact Wrestling? Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, that's what wrestling really should be about, compelling matchups. That's what UFC's been so good at doing on the MMA side, creating really compelling matchups. By controlling the atmosphere, like WWE, they're able to create those matchups, those one-of-a-kind matchups, where when you're finally going to see, you know, Braun Strowman against Brock Lesnar, then you know, it means something. So, yeah. You know, as you know, you have to do those builds.
Yeah, you were mentioning UFC. I think Bellator does a really good job at that, too, booking matches, booking...
Well, they just signed, Jack Swagger, yeah. Jack Hager, to a three-fight deal. That's, I mean, from a wrestling fan point of view, that's super compelling.
I can see Jack Swagger as the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Billy.
Wouldn't bother me.
Hey, is that the little one in the background?
Yeah, that's my son, yeah.
All right. Hey, Billy.
It's actually his second birthday tomorrow, so.
Awesome.
I said to him, do you know what tomorrow is? I said, tomorrow is your birthday, and he said, no.
Hey, Billy, I did watch you on Rogan. So I did hear you talk about this, but when I mentioned that you were going to be on the show, a lot of people wanted me to ask you about your Nickelback comment.
Wait, back up. First of all, what did I say?
You talked about Nickelback on Rogan, and I remember I saw it, and you were talking about how the it was just like porn. You know, pop music is like porn, and like. You know how everyone gives them shit, but how really like there's good songwriting there and everything. Well, some people ran with that, Billy, and they're like giving you shit about that.
I understand the general concept, but what did I say that they took umbrage with?
I guess it's just the fact that everyone hates Nickelback so much. I agree with you, Billy. I don't see what the big problem is with Nickelback.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I never know where to go with stuff like that because there's lots of music I hate in the world. You know what I mean?
Like what?
But I don't think it's up for me to decide who's good or bad. I mean, I could sit here and tell you who I like, but sure. At the end of the day, or who I don't like, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference. It's the fans who decide. Mm-hmm.
I didn't even want to bring that up. It's just I heard it from several people.
Oh no. Yeah. No, what I'm saying is, I guess what I'm trying to say is, look, at the end of the day. They're one of the most successful bands ever.
Exactly.
So,
it's got to be for a reason, right?
But that's what I'm saying is people can have their opinions, but at the end of the day, that band is still wildly successful. So if you don't start from a place of respect and then move to opinion, and if all you have is an opinion, well, then you're just like everybody in the crowd.
Amen. Yep.
You've been a hugely visible and outspoken wrestling fan since ECW days. Why do you think it is that now in 2017, every month or every other month, there's a story that suddenly trends where it's like, oh, wow, Billy Corgan likes pro wrestling? Like, why does that keep happening?
You know, I have no idea other than it's just they must be getting clicks because, to me, this is a very old story. I mean, MTV, I did an angle with ECW, I think in 2000, and MTV ran a video piece, and they started by saying, this is a sign of the apocalypse. Okay? And it was me taking a guitar shot or something, you know, whatever happened, and, you know, Louis Dangerously hit me in the back of the head with the phone or something at the Hammerstein Ballroom, or I hit him with a guitar, whatever the angle was at the time. But the point is this idea 17 years later, I mean, first of all, I've been in professional wrestling now, I think, for 6 or 7 years. I own the oldest wrestling brand in the world. This idea that it's like a curious thing is—I don't understand how it even plays. It's so not a story, but like obviously it was somebody's making money off it.
Like it was some dirty secret or something.
I mean, I thought I'd taken that bullet years ago. You know what I mean?
Well, you've always been a huge wrestling fan and supported the wrestling community. I remember one of my first PWG shows before lots of celebrities were just seen at PWG. You were there sitting on the stage. What was your PWG experience like?
Well, I'd never been to PWG. I went a couple times, and that was the first time. And I was blown away by the atmosphere. And I'd heard about Bryan Danielson, you know, now known as Daniel Bryan. I'd heard about him and heard about the mystique, but when I saw it for myself and I saw the reaction of the fans and I saw his in-ring work, I thought, wow, this guy's really a star. And so very happy for him that he went on to have injuries issues, but actually brain issues, right? I mean, I'm not crazy. Am I wrong about that? Did he have concussion issues, right?
Yeah. And some neck issues too, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what an incredible talent, and you know, obviously talk about whether or not he's going to come back. But seeing a talent like that up close, as he's peaking into what became a main event career, fantastic PWG, great atmosphere, great fans, really made me start to appreciate that level of work at the indie level. You know, I'd seen Ring of Honor, and you know, I'd seen a lot of that stuff, but PWG sort of showed me that there was this other thing coming that maybe, you know, is more obvious now with the way the internet works, but at the time it was sort of new to me. I don't mean I'd never seen it, but it was like PWG put it all together where you could really see that level of in-ring work all in one place in a hothouse atmosphere. It was fantastic.
Is that atmosphere something you're striving for with the NWA?
Yeah, I think you need to bring back a certain ambiance. And it's hard to explain and hard to articulate, because when I say it, it probably gives the wrong message. If I say I want the ambiance of what it felt like to be at the International Amphitheater in 1972, people automatically assume I want to take it back to some old form of wrestling. I don't. But there was a certain atmosphere there in the kayfabe days that you know, people believed in it in a way that wasn't just they believed in the kayfabe. They believed in the sort of the general feel of those guys. And I think wrestling is missing a little bit of that right now. I mean, I see it when I see Brock Lesnar. I see it when I see Bobby Lashley. I see it when I watch MMA. And I know that feeling can be brought in back across the board with the NWA. I know it's there to be had. It'll take time to build, but I know when we get there, I think we'll stand apart, because I'll be able to recreate that atmosphere in a way that feels very contemporary. And particularly, and this is one of my major harps, wrestling needs to get younger. We need to start attracting younger fans again.
Yeah.
And I want a 15-year-old to turn on the NWA product at some point and have the same reaction I had when I was 10 the first time I saw Dick the Bruiser. I want that kid to have that same, like, what am I watching? And I really think that wrestling at its core is it has to start with kids. It has to, you know, it's the same reason the comic book movies are so big, because we read comic books when we were a kid. You know, we Generation X ushered in that generation of comic book movies, because we'd all read the Marvel comics and the DC comics when we were kids. It was in our imagination, is what I'm trying to say.
We got
to
adopt.
If you don't implant that level of imagination, yep, with kids when you have them right in front of you on a computer screen, you're not going to get them when they're 30. And somebody sitting there saying, oh, it's all fake, who cares?
We got to indoctrinate them when they're young, Billy. We got to get them when they're, you know, when they're malleable. Anyways, hey, before we let you go, you guys, we're going to do a last round here, questions. Go ahead.
I listened to your interview with Alex Jones, and you spoke about making this documentary that was possibly going to be a series where you toured America with a veteran and a wrestler. I was wondering what's going on with that, and what wrestler you went on tour with, and how that whole experience was.
It was actually at the beginning of 2016 that I toured around the country in an RV with a wrestler, Josephus, who's out of Nashville, and a vet buddy of mine who'd been in Iraq for a couple tours. We ended up not making that documentary, but then me and Dave Lagana from the NWA, we made a documentary at the beginning of this year called 30 Days, where we did the same thing. We toured around in an RV and documented our journey. So, but we didn't make the other documentary, unfortunately.
My last question to you would be, at what point did you decide that you were going to get into the wrestling business fully and completely?
I tried to get involved in TNA business probably around 2005, 2006. I actually pitched them on some ideas I had. I talked to Kevin Sullivan about some things that I wanted to try and got absolutely nowhere. And
TV producer Kevin Sullivan, right? Not the Prince of Darkness Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, the Kevin Sullivan producer.
Yeah.
Who's a very talented guy. Actually, I would have worked with the other Kevin Sullivan in a heartbeat.
That would be a good fit.
Anyway, so I, you know, basically looking back now, I think TNA's flirtations with me back in the day were strictly to keep me on the line if they ever needed any money. They would sort of play footsie with me about coming in the company. And then, of course, they eventually did hire me to be involved in the company. And now, of course, looking back now, I realize they brought me in the company with the hopes that I would invest, which obviously ended up happening. So somewhere in that mixture of being involved with TNA through the years, it dawned on me that I could be in the business.
You talked earlier about telling good stories and trying to tell the best story and the most compelling match. Other than Tim Storm, of the people who are out there that you think might be a bit available to you, who are you dying to tell the story with or about?
Well, the names that are available on the free market right now are Sandow, Ryback, Swagger. I mean, any of those guys will look pretty good in an NWA ring, so I would hope to work with them. And you know, look, you know, there's people being released out of Impact as we speak. I mean, that was some headlines yesterday. So we'll see. You know, not NWA won't be the right fit for everybody because it's not that traditional 52 weeks a year of television at this point. You know, and some of the talents that I've talked to, that's sort of their concern. Like, if you take me off of national television, sort of what does that do to my profile? Well, since they saw what we've been doing with Tim Storm, now the phone started ringing again. A lot of those people called us back because they want that same sort of type of treatment. They see the personal care and attention to detail that we're putting into the 10 Pounds of Gold documentary, and they're starting to wonder if that maybe that's a better fit for them than the traditional schedule.
And we assume James Ellsworth is on your radar as well.
Is that a joke? Or?
No, he just got released today.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Wow.
He'd have a great story to tell. Definitely.
Hey, listen, I've often talked to, you know, good old JR about this because, he was a talent coordinator for many years. You know, he was the guy who cut the checks and all that stuff. And it's interesting to talk to somebody like JR about these ideas, but my general philosophy is if you have talent, I don't care what you look like.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
You know what I mean? And I always go back to a guy like Jerry Blackwell or Adrian Adonis. Those guys could work, man. Those guys were incredible.
Adrian Adonis and Roddy Piper were the best match on WrestleMania 3. Without it, everyone says Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage. You go back and watch Adrian and Roddy just kill it out there. I mean, they had the people. I mean, that was the best match of the show, if you ask me.
So I don't know, Piper, who I love. I mean, you don't think of Piper as being a bodybuilder, you know?
Right.
Didn't have the best. He didn't walk through the door and look like a giant killer. But one of the best promos ever. One of the greatest characters ever. One of the most charismatic performers ever.
Yeah, for sure. Billy,
my last thing. My thing is just at talent. You send me talent, I'm all for it. If you're talented, that's why I like somebody like Spud. I'm sorry that the WWE grabbed him. I would have grabbed Spud in a second. That guy is talented, yeah. You know. So give me talent, I know what to do with it. Give me no talent, I don't. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Hey, Billy, we're gonna let you go. Do you want to ask one more thing,
well,
Jimbo?
I just
go ahead.
I wanted to know who parties harder, rock stars or wrestlers?
Wrestlers.
Yeah, probably, right? Yeah. Billy, you know, I'm going to let you go, but I just wanted to mention this to you because several years back, well, it's not been several years, but more than a few years ago now, you took me aside and I was telling you about my issues with my children and how I was estranged from them, and things are so much better with my kids now. And you talked to me about that about your relationship with your father, and it really put a lot of things in perspective to me. And between that conversation I had back then and one I had probably a year or so ago with Paul Heyman, those conversations really, really helped me with my relationship with my son. And I want to thank you so much for that.
Hey, I'm blessed to know you, Sean. You're one of my favorite people, and you know, I wish you nothing but the best. I'm always there for you, buddy. You're just a great man. I just love you to death.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you so much. I'm really we are honored to have you on the show today and to give us some of your time, because dude, I know how busy you are, man. And like I said just now, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today, Billy.
Thank you, Sean. It was great talking to you guys. Had a lot of fun. Thanks.
Hey, anything you want to plug real quick?
No, just if anybody's interested in what we've been talking about, just subscribe to the NWA YouTube channel and follow us on social media. I think we're just at NWA. Mm-hmm. And cool. And follow along. We got a lot of stuff coming, and it'll be a journey like no other. I can promise you that.
Thank you so much, Billy. William Patrick Corgan, everyone.
Yeah.
Have an awesome day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Commercial or just go into the
Let's go. I think we should just take it home, don't you?
Yep.
So real quick.
Give me the Iggy.
Real quick. Hey, dude, let's do the whole thing to wrap up here.
Sean's going to be headed to Australia the 24th to the 27th. Melbourne on Friday the 24th. Adelaide Saturday the 25th. Brisbane Sunday the 26th. And Sydney Monday the 27th.
Yeah.
Come see him in the land of down under.
What you got going on, Denise?
You guys can check me out on Twitter and on Instagram at underscore Denise Salcedo. And also on YouTube, just search Denise Salcedo.
What do you got going on, William?
Check out uprocks.com with spandex.com, uprocks.com/prowrestling. If you would like a companion piece to today's X-Pac 12360 podcast, you can check out today's McMansplaining with Spandex podcast, where we have NWA Vice President Dave Lagana on for another amazing hour of conversation about what's happening with that company and very little overlap with this discussion.
Nice. That's always good, TK. What's up?
You can follow us on AfterBuzz at AfterBuzz TV. You can follow us on Twitter, The Real X-Pac, IG, X-Pac 12360, and also on Facebook. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. You can follow me on everything at TK Trinidad. And also, Thanksgiving is coming up. So if you do want to donate or you want to help homeless people or any of that good stuff, I'll be doing all that. You can follow me on Instagram to find out places you can go.
That's great. I love that you are really into all that stuff.
That's cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in this week. And we'll see you right here next week on X-Pac 12360. Yeah.
SVTech, Sean Waltman, producers Jimbo Frank and TK Trinidad, managing producer of AfterBuzz TV Wrestling, Mark Donica, and the entire X-Pac 12360 staff. We would like to thank you for tuning in. Like us on Facebook, rate and comment on iTunes and YouTube. Follow X-Pac on Twitter at TheRealXPac and email us at X-Pac12360Show@gmail.com. This has been a presentation of the AfterBuzz TV Network. Buzz you later!